You're listening to Face Off, episode 43, recorded November 8th, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. All right, let's get to our news and follow-ups. This is just kind of some news. It's kind of web technology, I think, you know, as far as we define it. But lately, Mark and I have been using, some sort of back history would be important. Mark and I's favorite editor is Vim.
Yes, Vim is awesome.
Both love Vim. Super useful. It's just what I decided. You know, it's kind of like, you know, Vim and Emacs is like kind of whatever one you start with first. Right. You know, had you shown them both to me before I used any console-based editor, I wouldn't have known which one to choose. Mm-hmm. But I've grown up using Vim now. So
anybody that isn't familiar with these types of editors, they're not your typical. You just click in there and start typing. They're like totally loaded with shortcuts and have different modes and all this crazy stuff.
They're designed not to use your mouse. You know, The whole point, like Vim especially, you know, the whole point is you navigate using the JK and L, HJKL, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
You're on home row at all times. You don't use the arrows or anything like that.
So you use like HJK and L to navigate through the document, to actually edit the text in the document. You hit I to go in insert mm-hmm. mode or A to append.
It's like console based, so there's no GUI or anything to load up. It's super fast.
We like it because it doesn't use a mouse. I mean, I don't mm-hmm. want to use a mouse. Especially lately, my wrist has been hurting. I'm starting to wonder, you know, if I just have a bad angle somewhere at work. But, you know, I need to quit using the mouse because that movement can really hurt you at times.
So. And it slows your productivity down, too.
So totally.
It slows you down.
So, anyways, we we had heard about this a while ago, but we both kind of tried it and thought it wasn't mature enough to use. But then recently we sort of tried it again because some people we know were using it and said it was great. Vimperator, which is a Firefox plugin that allows you to treat Firefox like Vim.
So, like, any of the shortcuts you have in Vim directly translate over to Firefox.
Yeah.
And any Vim users that get used to the shortcuts, I mean, they just make sense. Like, the J and the K up, down, and you just get totally. You don't think, once you get used to it, you don't think about it. You just use them.
Yeah.
And so, this is awesome to have it right in the browser, consistent, mm-hmm. you know.
It's tough, though. The nice thing about Vimperator, though, is it doesn't really hinder your ability to use the mouse to click links. So this is, like, the hardest part. Navigating up and down using JK uh-huh. seems normal. That doesn't – I remember to do that. But clicking links, I thought, was always going to be difficult.
Yeah.
And it's not that bad. You hit F, and basically every link that is visible has a number next to it. Or you can – so you can hit, like, you know, F and then, like, 21 to click the link that has a 21 next to it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can start typing the actual link text, and if it can find one that it likes, you know, it'll click on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's taking more getting used to. I'm getting better right. about it, but I'm finding that – that sometimes I'm either in total Vimperator mode or I'm not at all. Like the second I have to use the mouse for anything, I kind of forget that I'm in Vimperator and I start clicking on links everywhere, you know, click, click, click. And then I'm like, oh, Jade, go back to your Vimperator mm-hmm. stuff.
It's cool, though, because it gets rid of the entire status bar. So if you've got like a netbook or something with limited screen space, I mean, it's automatically solves that problem. Yeah. Like you said, if you forget and you don't really want to use the keyboard to click on links, you can still grab the mouse and it still works.
For the most part, it doesn't hinder your mm-hmm. your sort of normal browsing. Mm-hmm. Other people would have difficulty if they come just because they wouldn't see the address bar. They wouldn't know how to open links. But you could honestly open a web page with someone in Vimperator and say, do it. And they could sit and click around it and have no problem with it.
Except, like, I mean, you don't have a back button or anything like that because those are all just shortcut based.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Right. The one that gets me is I always used Alt-T or Control-T to open a new tab.
Oh, yeah.
And in Vimperator, you hit T and then type the address that you want to open in a new tab.
Enter.
So I always forget. I hit Control-T. And so I would have to hit Control-T and then hit O to open the web page.
Mm-hmm.
And I always forget because I'm so used to hitting Control-T and having the address bar highlighted. So I'm always like Control-T and then I start typing an address.
Yeah,
and it starts doing crazy stuff, you know, because I'm typing a bunch of different buttons that do things. But I don't know. Like you said, it's really nice for the netbook. One thing I found with my netbook is that my fingers often brush against the touchpad, which is not a big deal because my touchpad comes with a button to shut it off, you know, mm-hmm. a physical button. But it's also that's so it's really nice with VimPrator. I can shut that trackpad off and still surf the web nice mm-hmm. without having to worry about accidentally clicking on stuff with my you know my thumb lump or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean it makes sense on a notebook because the trackpad and you know if you don't have a mouse handy or whatever, yeah, that trackpad's really slow. Yeah. Amplify. I mean, it's a lot slower than even a desktop would be. Totally. And so your hands are if they're always on the key, the home key. Or the home row on the keyboard, you can navigate pages quite a bit faster.
Yeah.
The one limitation that I've found is Flash-based websites, because Flash has the ability to take over shortcuts, and that just
but Flash and really JavaScript like Google heavy JavaScript sites can kind of goof up because Google does a lot of times they overmap they overwrite the shortcut so that you can you know make Gmail stuff more useful but that's okay right
yeah because there is a pass through function
yeah so you can enable pass through mode and it treats your keyboard the same as it was before you installed VimPrator so like you know if you need to get into Flash you can just take you know Control Z to hit pass through mode and they can still click and type and do all the stuff normally it is a pain though that kind of sucks but
so I would recommend anybody that loves Vim and you know uses Firefox I would say give it a try
Totally.
The main thing is the link display, so F, remember that, and then go through the tutorial or something.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's the same keys as Vim. If you haven't tried Vim or whatever, it's probably not going to be very useful to you.
Yeah.
You might want to learn Vim first. If that's something you
want to. The funny part is about VimPrator, too, is sometimes when you have to figure out what a functionality in VimPrator is, you realize that that's also useful in regular Vim, and it's made me a better Vim user. Hmm. Not only just because I'm sort of in the same environment, same sort of keyboard shortcut environment, but just because sometimes I'm like, I just closed a tab. How do I do that? And you're like, oh, you, which is undo in Vim, and that makes sense. You close the tab, undo it. Oh, it opens, right? Yeah. Like, why, you know, in Vim is yank, so you yank the URL and then, you know, paste it somewhere else. It's really
cool. Like GG would go to the top of the page instantly and Shift G would go to the bottom. That's the same in Vim, the editor.
Yeah. So I say I never remember that stuff and now I have to because I have two very useful programs that shortcut would be very useful in, right?
Those shortcuts.
Totally.
Some people ask, well, how do you remember all that stuff? It's crazy. If I type even one line of like HTML in like, let's say a WordPress text box or something, I'll automatically start trying to do controlled, you know, colon W's and all kinds of crazy stuff because my mind just switches over.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy.
And that's the problem with Vim is, and so what I found with Vim too, especially is you take one little tip or something, you know, and you have to like seriously integrate it. You have to really try to use it for like a week. And I mean, really consciously try to use it. Mm-hmm. And then finally it gets integrated into your workflow. And it's almost like you'll never forget it.
You never stop learning Vim. You keep learning.
Totally. Exactly. There's no one person in the world that knows Vim.
Right.
So check it out. If you like Vim, you like Firefox, you like being productive and fun, try VimPrator. Put a link in the show notes. All right. Let's go to our web apps. The first one is near and dear to my heart. I think it's a very fun website. It's called Know Your Meme. So throughout the internet, throughout the ages of the internet, let's get nostalgic here, forums and various websites have taken a theme of something and made it a meme, and it's spread throughout the internet now. I remember being in forums back in the day, and when sort of the average person would learn of a meme that started in my forum, I would almost get angry. I was like, we started that, how dare you take that? But the problem is now the internet is so big. It used to be one or two places where all this stuff happened, but now there's so much stuff. There's so many dense communities going on that these memes pop out, and you kind of like, I don't get it, right? Why is Hitler ranting about stuff? And you go to Know Your Meme, and you can look it up and see where it started and kind of what the deal is with it.
Mm-hmm. So, back in the day, you remember, like, the dancing baby, anything that spread across the internet, like, really fast or, like, something that they took and ran with it, you know. They started off as one little clip, and then they kept adding on to it. So what Know Your Meme is a site that has a compilation of all of them, and you can click and watch them or see them or see examples. You can see trends about them, and it's really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a site you can blow a lot of time. So when you go to, a meme, you can see the, where it or the community of origin, you can see the year that it started, it has links to Wikipedia about it and stuff. So for example, one of the original, a really old meme that was really funny was the Pancake Bunny.
Yeah.
Where this dude had a bunny that would let him put things on its head, and it just held itself so still that he could, like, stack pancakes or, like, stack cookies and put soup cans on it and stuff, and that rabbit would just sit there.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm looking through here, like, the Willett blend, you know, the guy who puts iPhones and blends them and things, golf balls and stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, you're going to be surfing around the internet, and all of a sudden someone's going to have, like, a picture of, like, Kanye West that says, "I'm going to let you finish," and you're like, what? I don't get that. You can go here and read it. And the other part, too, is it can show you, like, really good examples of the meme, too, so you can find some, almost the funniest ones of the series, right?
Yeah, some of them you're like, I know that meme, and you click on it, and you read about more of the origin of how it started, and you're like, oh, I guess I didn't know as much as I thought I did.
Totally.
Oh, I remember now that was Star Wars Kid. Remember that one?
Oh, goodness. That was an old one. That one made the news.
Yeah.
So if you have a meme that you want to look up, get some more information about it, or maybe here's a great example. Someone asks you, like, hey, what's the deal with this meme? I don't really get it. You can send them a link here, and it'll give them all the proper information they need to understand it and continue to spread it throughout the internet.
Yep.
All right. So our next web app we want to talk about is a quick little readability bookmark. You know, the truth is, I think this was a reader submission, and I can't remember who submitted it. I think someone told me in an email or in person, but the link is in the show notes. It's kind of a long one, but it's from arc90.com. And what it does is it's a bookmarklet that sits up in your bookmarklet tray or whatever. And you go to a website, let's say, that, you know, has really small text, you know, or just in general is kind of a pain. You can click the readability bookmark, and it really just sort of organizes the text in a very readable way. You know, the titles, the font spacing, the font itself. It gets rid of the background. It gets rid of the ads. You know, it gives you really good, what do you call that? Like text spacing, word spacing stuff. What do you call that stuff?
Yeah, we've talked about this. Line spacing, line height and line spacing and things, yeah.
So it gives you really good defaults for that and gives you, you know, it really kind of cleans up the article and makes it a lot easier to read.
Cool.
So, yeah.
So really, does it strip the images and things too? And
No, the image is embedded in the article. Yeah, it keeps. But it gets rid of sort of all like background images and all, you know, ads and all that junk and stuff, which can be a pain.
Yeah.
So,
you know what would be really nice is if it could like combine, you know how sometimes they have them like, you know, the article split up in four pages?
And combine
them. Because sometimes, well.
That is such a pain.
What they'll do is they'll like grab the RSS feed and copy and paste it into something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it could. Look at the feed or something.
I don't know.
But those are, I hate
that'd be
those.
Nice. Yeah, because they're just, and sometimes they're not, I mean, I understand if it's a really long article, I could understand that.
Right.
But sometimes it's not even a long article, but they just split it up to get more eyes on their ads. And you're like, man, that's frustrating.
Terrible.
But check it out.
Cool. So you can have different styles, like the newspaper style or ebook, terminal, if you're reading maybe some technical stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's some settings that you can set before you put the bookmark up in your little bookmarklet bar and stuff like that. It just depends on what you like. You know, I tend to just enjoy the newspaper style, but if you click it, you can see the different sort of ways that it'll format it below. The terminal one is interesting. It's just green and white. If you're used to staring at a green terminal. Definitely. I like newspaper. Kind of my favorite, but it's got
different
nice
sizes.
I mean, nice
serif
font. And, yeah, this is
so
great
you change
for me.
The margin, because that's one thing. I've read a lot of studies where if the sentences are really long across the screen, it's tiring. And
yeah, totally.
Harder to read.
So you can shorten the margins. This is great for me because it's a quick way to get text large. My eyes aren't very good, so I like to have bigger text. You know, a lot of websites like to have really small text, and it really puts a strain on my eyes to have to read it.
Cool.
Yeah, so check it out. It's the readability bookmark. We'll get the link in the show notes.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just a bookmarklet. You can, you know, if you're not familiar with that, you just drag it, and it's a little JavaScript thing. You click it, and it just does it. You don't have to install anything. It's not an extension.
Yeah, totally. You just drag it to your bookmark bar, which I used to turn off by default until I started getting a couple of useful bookmarklets, and now I keep it up there. But you can also, if you want, this is a cool, kind of a cool Firefox trick, too. You can go into the bookmark settings. Let me do it. You go, like, go to properties, and then there's a keyword box. And if you fill the keyword box in, then all you have to do is go to that address and it'll actually go to that bookmarket. So like this is the readability one. So instead of using the bookmarklet bar, I can just put the keyword to like read, you know, and then all I have to do is go to that page, go to the address bar, type in read, and it'll actually apply that bookmarklet or go to that bookmark if you have that keyword set in the Firefox bookmark properties.
Oh, wow. So you just type it in the URL bar?
Yeah.
Just like read?
Yep.
You can make up
so
any
like,
word.
Let's say keyword. One of the addresses I go to a lot is we have a
a project tracker that is, the address is, you know, forge.montana.edu. Mm-hmm. And I type it a lot, and I got tired of typing the .mon, you know, so now I put a keyword in as forge. I go to the address bar, type forge.
Can you do that with like ZapReader then?
Yeah. Yeah. You could put a, you could just, and... yep.
I mean, those ones require you to highlight the text that you want spread. Or yeah, but
you just highlight and then go to the address
and
bar
type and type. It works. Cool.
Yeah.
So I like that because and then you don't have an extra bar hanging out.
I know, because I hate the extra bars too. I'm with you on that. So that's a good way to get rid of your extra bars.
Cool.
Yeah. We'll put a link. There has to be an article out there telling people how to do that. So we'll find one and post it in the show notes. All right. If you guys have any news, follow-ups, or a web app that you want us to take a look at, please go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Let us know. We always like to hear about stuff, or if we're wrong or you have a correction or anything, let us know.
All right, so a few episodes back, I promised that I'd do, and it seems like it's been a while.
It's been a while.
I promised we would do an image optimization kind of topic here, so we're going to do that today. The first thing we're going to talk about is the tools. Mm-hmm. We've got Image Magic.
Well, can I interject first?
Sure.
Why optimize your images? I mean, it seems maybe obvious, but, you know.
Well... the main reason is if you have a high a high trafficked site with lots of people, bandwidth can get expensive, and it's something that can be. I mean, images are often the largest. Well, of course, video and flash and things like that. But images, other than that, images are the next biggest thing.
Text is quick, but you know, images compared to text are quite bigger.
And a lot of people, you know, use Adobe Photoshop and some of these apps and just, you know, save their image and throw it up because it's easy. And there's a lot of times, almost always, you can compress them further and reduce, you know, the space. So the goal, I guess, is to reduce the bandwidth for cost reasons and also to get the page to load faster.
Yeah, you know, totally. I mean, some people, that's a good point.
Let's say you're on a mobile device and you don't have 3G or whatever. You've got the... You're in an out of range, or you know, you got a laptop, or you know, your grandma's house that doesn't have very fast internet.
Oh, yeah, the old parents with dial up still, or something like that.
It's a little bit faster for them, and even if you've got, you know, really fast internet, it still helps to do that for bandwidth reasons.
Totally.
And things.
So, I agree.
I mean, you don't want to go overboard, depending on your use. I mean, if it's an image that's going to be like your logo, that's going to be everywhere all the time, and it's not really going to change, you might as well compress it.
I agree. Yeah, that makes sense, right? So, cool.
All right, so
let's hit the tools.
The tools that we're going to talk about here is Image Magic. Image Magic is one of those libraries. It's also a command line program, and you know, it's embedded in a lot like PHP and Perl.
Totally. Been around forever, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you can do all kinds of things with this. You can, I mean, it's mainly for processing converting an image from maybe a GIF to a JPEG or resizing it. I wrote a tutorial on how to apply drop shadows to things.
Wow.
Automatically, like, through the command line. So you could do batch processing. Like, let's say you wanted to add a drop shadow to 500 images in 3 seconds. You could do that with this.
That's crazy.
So, we're going to talk about how you're going to use Image Magic in a little bit, but that's what it does. It can do some converting and cool stuff like that. It can also give you some information about the pictures.
Oh, great. So
that's what we're going to talk about a little bit later.
Okay.
The next one is PinCrush. And PinCrush is a tool specifically for, you know, obviously ping images. And
see, I call them PNG.
Okay.
So I'm disclaiming, I say PNG.
I say ping, but I don't say GIF. I say GIFs.
I say GIF too, which according to the people who wrote GIF, they said it's supposed to be GIF.
Really?
Yes. Yes. It's on their website. And wow. That's
CompuServe,
upsetting.
Right?
Yep.
Interesting. Okay. Well, ping, PNG crush.
No, I mean, the truth is, I don't know how you are supposed to pronounce it, right? I don't either. I don't know. I just kind of default to the actual letters because I don't know. I'll look it up while you talk about it.
Okay, so PinCrush is, you know, open source. You know, it's Linux, Windows. It's on SourceForge. You know, we talked about SourceForge a few episodes back. It's really easy to use to compress images. I mean, you can do all kinds of different types of compression, but, you know, we're going to use it to do lossless.
Does it only work for PNG files?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
And then the next one that is pretty much identical but for JPEGs is called JPEG Tran. And then we've got a tool called Smushit. Smushit is, it's now part of YSLOW, which we've talked about. Right. That's that bar, the Firefox extension where you could test how fast your page is loading and things.
Great.
And so it's integrated with that. And Smushit's really cool because you can upload it, and it's going to use tools like Pincrush and JPEG Tran and to get the final result
totally.
For you. But if you want to do like batch processing and you know, like get down and dirty, the Pincrush and JPEG Tran are the ones that you're going to want to use. And then the next one is PunyPing. And I threw this one in here because it's like Smushit, but it also has a comparison. And they claim that they compress images much better than Smushit.
Interesting.
They're claiming they're better than Smushit. You know, they can compress images further than Smushit. They've got a few comparisons here.
Interesting.
OptiPing, which is the Windows version of kind of Pincrush. So I threw that in there, and so it's like Smushit. It's another tool to use. And then we've got Riot, and Riot is it's in. Have you used UrbanView?
Yeah.
So UrbanView is, man, is that how you pronounce
yeah,
that
it's,
one too?
It's, okay. It's either Irfan or Irfan, but that's basically the correct pronunciation.
It uses this in it as a plugin.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about this one because it's basically, you know, the Adobe Save for Web feature. Mm-hmm. That's what this does, but it does it very well.
Yeah.
Unlike the Adobe one where it doesn't give you as many options to do lossless compression and
UrbanView is like a free image editor that has a lot of cool functionality, and a lot of people use it because it did do batch processing. I remember that's the few times I've used it was I was like, I needed something specifically to do batch processes mm-hmm. on an image, and it worked great for that.
So what this one's different is it's not really like a command line based like Pincrush and JPEG Tran. It's more like here's a picture, and then here's a picture if you compress it with this one side by side. So you can see, like, if I, you know, jack this up and what's the compression going to be like. It's much like what you use Adobe Photoshop, but it allows things like getting rid of EXIF information, you know, information that you don't need out of the image to further compress
Great.
It. More That's than, cool. I mean, Adobe Photoshop Save for Web is pretty good and most people use it, but this is a little extra step. Maybe you could save it just as the raw image in Photoshop and then open it with this and tweak it from there.
Hmm.
And then maybe head off to Pincrush or Smushit or one of the Puny Pings.
So, it is pronounced pin, ping. No, I think that's ping. I think it's right. Or spelled out as PNG. It goes both ways.
But GIF is GIF?
Yeah.
Because I always call it GIF.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I think GIF is silly, but... anyway.
GIF is that peanut butter stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Choosy moms don't, you know... choose graphic interchange format.
Okay, so what are the things you can do? The first thing you're going to want to do is you're going to want to pick the right format for your image. I mean, that seems like
totally.
the first step, I guess. Is totally. You don't want to, things like, you don't want to save a photo with GIF or GIF
yeah.
format. Because
yeah.
they're limited to about 256 colors, and it doesn't do a very good job with multiple colors.
Yeah, with a lot of colors, the more colors you have, the bigger the file is. So, like a lot of GIF optimizations sort of work into trying to reduce the colors
mm-hmm.
So that, you know, and then you kind of like have this scale of like, okay, well, that kind of looks how I wanted it. But, and then if you go any lower, you're like, okay, well, that looks like
terrible.
Those aren't even the colors I want, you know, and yeah, you'll notice it.
So, and you know, vice versa, you don't want to really use JPEG that's meant for photographs and things for a logo that's got four colors or something,
totally.
You know?
Yeah.
And then PNG, ping files they seem to be preferable over GIFs now, unless you're doing animation.
Yeah.
But, and then there's two kinds, you know, there's ping 8 and ping 24.
Yeah. But for me, the big difference is, so GIF supports transparency, JPEG does not.
Mm-hmm.
And PNG supports alpha level transparency. So with a GIF, it's like either that pixel is transparent or not.
Mm.
But with PNGs, you can set that pixel has a level of opacity,
mm.
which is great because. But the problem with PNG is it is only really gaining popularity now because older browsers didn't support it, mainly
right.
in Explorer 6.
Yeah, I mean, Ping was developed as a replacement for GIF, so it does everything that GIF. Or GIF.
Can you animate
PNG? No, you can't. That's the only limitation. Okay. You can't animate.
But maybe we don't need more animated GIFs on the internet.
But one of the reasons was because there was this whole thing that CompuServe still held the patent for the GIF format. Mm-hmm. And so this was like a replacement thing. But the biggest thing was not all browsers supported it.
Yeah, totally.
But now it seems like they're pretty safe now.
Yeah, I mean, I think so.
They're safe.
There's even like some JavaScript plugins that you can put that like, so the problem is the older browsers supported it, but not natively. You had to put like some extra information in the tag. Mm-hmm. So there are like some JavaScript plugins and stuff that you can do now that will go through and find all your PNG images. And you know, if it's Internet Explorer, it'll mm-hmm. add that data that will then allow the PNG to be transparent.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, the first tip is, and this comes from the Yahoo, it's what do they call that? The high performance sites developer network.
Yeah.
So the first little thing we can do is, you know, we can try to convert GIFs or GIF files to ping, because mm-hmm. it seems pings tend to have a better algorithm for compressing, mm-hmm. and it can do everything that a GIF can, and they are supported pretty much by all the major mm-hmm. browsers now. And so try to convert a GIF to a ping, and oftentimes they are smaller. So. Not always. Great. But, I mean, they usually are. And so you can use Image Magic. That was the first one we talked about. And it's really simple. You just convert image.gif to image.ping, and it will convert it to you for you.
Wow.
And then you can compare the file sizes.
Huh.
And then if you wanted to further compress the ping file, you could use the Ping Crush tool that we talked about. And then we'll, in the show notes, we'll put a little link on how to do that.
Or smush it.
You can upload it to Smush It or PunyPing.
Oh, yeah, PunyPing.
The next thing is, it kind of goes along the lines again as, you know, pick the right format type. Image Magic has a tool where you can use, it's called Identify. And so you type in Identify and then verbose and then the image mm-hmm. file name. And it will give you information about how many colors the image actually has how many slots you have available. So if the image only has four colors and you're using full 256 bit,
yeah,
you know, you have Why? Room, yeah,
totally.
So you're totally using the wrong file type.
Okay,
there,
that's interesting.
So I mean, that's a major one. If you switch down, you'll obviously have a much smaller image size. And then for JPEGs, you can always use like JPEG Tran, or you can also upload that to Smush It.
Great, that's easy.
Yeah,
the problem is, yeah, I guess I'm lazy.
Yeah, that's
so right. So like with JPEGs, right? One of the things is just to pick the best sort of compression level, let's say. And I'm lazy. I don't want to do that. I don't do the save for web. I always just save it, and I just do JPEG, and I always crank it up all the way to the full, you know, the minimum amount of compression.
Mm-hmm.
But with the way you have here, I mean, I could do that. And then do a batch later, you know, do the batch cleanup later so that I don't have to really interrupt my workflow within my image editor.
Yeah. I mean, if you're pretty certain that you're done with whatever graphic it is and you're putting that into your CSS and things and you're pretty much done, you might as well just, I mean, a lot of these are command line based. You can just copy and paste this code or maybe make an alias for it.
Huh. That's cool. Yeah, like, so I mean, the JPEG one, that's really easy. You can loop through a directory and it'll optimize that.
Yeah, I mean, you could go to your CSS images directory or whatever, and then for every ping file, just run ping crush.
So is this JPEG command that will be in the show notes, by the way,
is
that lossless?
Yes, both of these are lossless. So the first step is to identify if you're using the right file type. Use Image Magic. Make sure you don't have too many colors and more colors than what you need.
Yep.
Once you got that nailed, pick the right compression level. Like you said, do you want it really high quality or whatever? Mm-hmm. And then once you do that, make sure you use something like Ping Crush or JPEG Tran to do lossless compression. You know, it does things like removes comments mm-hmm. and just extra information.
The whole point is it compresses it without losing any of the visual information,
right,
but removing things that it doesn't need in a smart way.
Right.
So like lossless compression for music is music that is in the original form that you can hear, mm-hmm. But it is still compressed. It's not the raw, you know,
right,
which like an image would be a bitmap, which is huge.
Right. But you wouldn't want to run this and then go and jack and then play with your actual
totally.
lossy
lossy
compression. Lossy compression.
Yeah. And so
you'd want to do that first and then use this.
And it won't fix. So if you save an image, you save an image with a lot of lossy compression. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't use a program like this to go around and all of a sudden it's magically fixed. You know, right. It has to be in a pristine format.
Yeah.
It will then compress in a lossless way.
And then, so that's it. I mean, it's pretty easy for those to do that.
We'll put these in the show notes, but there's lots of command line commands. There's, of course, web apps that do it that we have links to. But if you want to do them yourself, there's command line tools that you can use here that you can do batch processes with to save it. And so you can get those by going to the show notes and then copy and paste them. If you're not a command line junkie, you can just copy and paste them or use a web app.
And then the next little section is just like CSS sprites. These CSS sprite is where you have like multiple images in one image, mm-hmm. and then you just tell CSS to pick the little
portion of it. So that image is loaded once, right? Mm-hmm. It's loaded and cached, but you're just telling CSS at very specific spots to say, you know, cut and paste this little chunk out and only display it that.
Yeah.
So the entire web page is really only loading one image, but then going to the different snippets of the image in each part of your code.
Yeah. The idea behind that is that for every request to the server, it's added extra DNS lookups and stuff that I'm not sure about. But it's definitely they say the people that know more than I do say it's a lot slower to make requests.
Yeah,
multiple requests. So you have one image, one request.
And there are a couple Sprite web apps out there. We'll link to one. I know that there's one out there that someone submitted to the show.
Yeah,
but to me, this is kind of the next level. I'm not even there yet, really. Mm-hmm. Once I got into a sort of commercial operation where I was really starting to worry about my hits, I would probably look into something like CSS sprites. Yeah, but it's great. It's really good for things like the images you're using in your template and stuff, right?
Especially hovers. Hover, like totally. If the state changes, it glows or something. When you hover it, you just copy and paste that same one and put it lower, you know?
Totally.
Amazon's using this. Apple uses it for their navigation bar. When you move your mouse over it, it's just swapping out images from the main sprite. navigation sprite. And so a little bit about that it's in itself will reduce the server load a little bit because it's just one request. Then the other it's a little bit to tweak it. You could do, you know, if you arrange the images horizontally versus vertically, it usually results in a smaller size. That was on the Yahoo high performance sites.
Interesting.
I don't know why it does that, but if you put them horizontally rather than like stack them vertically.
Yeah, I saw an article like that about some guy was doing this with JPEGs where he was looking at the pattern of stuff in his JPEG and lining them up within the pixel to get like more compression out of it. So like, you know, if your image is kind of, let's say the lines of your image are mid-pixel, then that's an extra color because it kind of has to, you know, average the two colors that would be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was talking about that, and that was hardcore. I was like, wow, that guy is intense.
It has to do, it probably has something to do with the way the image compression algorithm works, and horizontally is better.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is don't try to keep them don't have this massive 1280 by 1024 huge image with 40 images inside the one image, because each one it still has to calculate where.
Totally.
You know, and some of these mobile devices don't have the CPU power to...
Well, that image is still loaded in RAM, right? I mean, it's loaded. It even then, if it's bigger, that's going to take it longer to download after that first time you download it. So don't do it. I mean, compact it and compress it and get it as close as you can, right?
Yeah, but don't put like every single image of your entire site in one image.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's really good for like template images and stuff. Okay, so we haven't done these in a while, but this is kind of like a web don'ts. What are the don'ts with image things, right?
The big one, and I see this sometimes, is don't scale images with HTML. This is where you have somebody took a picture with their camera, it's like 4 megapixels, and they resize it on the page to like 300 pixels.
Yeah, with HTML. And you'll see HTML, it, like, so you load the page, and you'll see like this little tiny like 300 by 300 image, and it's taking forever to load. And you can see like the little lines load on it, and you're like, whoa. And so then you like can right-click on it and hit view image, and it's like
this boom, you're like humongous image.
Okay. Yeah, that's why I love WordPress, because you can give the biggest image, and no matter what, it'll resize it into like two different sizes that are smaller and usable for you.
And oftentimes, HTML resizing doesn't look very good.
No, you're leaving it up to the browser to decide how it's rendered, and that often looks like junk.
And you're wasting bandwidth. If the image is meant to be, that size, why not put it that size? You know, and then we talked about these ones, you know, don't use GIF or PNG for photographs. Totally. And then don't use JPEG for like a logo or a navigation bar or something that's got only 20 colors or something.
Totally.
Use, I mean, JPEGs are meant for millions of colors.
Definitely.
Or hundreds of thousands. So
absolutely. All right. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Face Off and our big image optimization, tutor session. We want to remind you guys that you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe, and you can leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Please do that. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you guys next week.